Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hi everybody, producer Al here, time for another TSFP Presents re-release here on the Monday podcast feed, and it's the final episode of TSFP Presents Classic Teams. In this episode, we tried to sum up the absolutely wild ride which was Real Betis towards the end of the 20th century and the early 21st. This episode was first broadcast in early 2019. I remember, for access to our entire TSFP Presents archive and new episodes as well, you can join us as a patron over at patreon.com/TSFP.
Hello patrons, welcome to the final instalment in what has been quite a fun series to record. TSFP Presents Classic Teams.
Quite a fun series, that's... Yeah. That's the top line.
Ring endorsement. We're going out on a high by talking about a classic team that weren't actually, amazing. They were actually relegated during the period that we're going to be talking about. They did win the cup, and lots of other things happened as well.
We've had discussions over the course of this series as, you know, how good was this team? Were they really great or whatever? This team, yes, for large portions of the time we're going to be covering, weren't great at all. They were really quite bad. But they are kind of emblematic of the madness, the chaos of Spanish football.
Yeah, this is more a fun team than a classic team. And in fairness as well, it's kind of embodies a period of Spanish football,
exactly,
which was a bit kind of bonkers and a bit silly at times.
So it's Real Betis from 1997 to 2005. It's quite a long period.
It's basically the Lopera years, isn't it? I think he was president from 96 until 2006. So it's most of his era.
There are a lot of Betis fans who will be very unhappy us calling this the Lopera era, because although he was this kind of comedy character, although in some ways he embodied Real Betis, obviously he was also fundamentally a dodgy character.
Yeah. When the comedy becomes Betis, crime.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Convicted criminal. Manuel Ruiz Lopera de Avalos,
yes,
the 40th president of Real Betis, under whose tenure or stewardship they did enjoy some success. Obviously during this period they did win the Copa del Rey, they qualified for the Champions League for the first time ever in their history, they qualified for the UEFA Cup three times, for the Cup Winners' Cup, they finished runners-up in the Copa del Rey as well. So there was some success, which we'll talk about some of the coaches during this period. There were 11 different coaches yep, in this period,
including 4 in 3 months at one point, which is quite good going, isn't it?
I mean, that makes Jesus Hill look, you know, positively cautious,
taking his time.
But Sydney, tell us a bit about Manuel Ruiz Lopera de Avalos.
Right, this is a man who...
What was his business?
Well, to start with, his business was essentially... I mean, I promise you this isn't made up.
Yes.
Second-hand TVs.
Yes.
Sold with rather high interest rates, collected by rather large men. He would literally walk around keeping piles of cash in black bin bags. He would go around Seville picking up stray dogs. His favourite stray dog was, of course, his famous husky, Hugo.
Ovs.
And there's a great video. If you look it up on YouTube, I think it's called Flamenco del Wow Wow, which is G-U-A.
Which is woof woof in Spanish.
Woof woof in Spanish, yeah. I love, by the way...
Dogs go woof woof.
Yeah.
Woof woof in England and wow wow in Spain.
Well, I suppose it's bow wow, isn't it, in English?
It
would be the closest equivalent.
We don't.
And there's a video of Hugo supposedly singing.
Okay.
Yeah. He is committed to the Christ of the Great Power, Manuel Ruiz de Lopera. He named the stadium the Ruiz de Lopera, which, of course, since he's gone, is no longer named after him. He left the club with €84 million worth of debt, not least because he spent quite a lot of that on Danielson, which we'll come to. And
on other stuff.
And he then got kind of hauled before the courts. There's actually an ongoing criminal case based on who the shareholder is, and he hasn't completely gone away. And I'm not ruling out that he might win at some stage.
No.
And that he might effectively force his way back.
I mean, Spanish justice being what it is, don't rule anything out.
Yes. I mean, he did go to prison.
Yes.
He went to prison for, it was embezzlement of funds, something like that.
Have you ever seen images of his house? His house is like this weird kitsch Andalusian sort of tiled shriney thing.
Palace.
Yeah, I suppose.
I can imagine.
I mean, there's probably quite a lot of houses like that in Andalusia.
But ultra kitsch and just really quite strange. I used to refer to him when I was writing about him back in the day as the Prince of Darkness, because he had this kind of, well, it was frightening. And of course, most famously frightening when he turned up at the Halloween party. Now, can you imagine? This is the one person who turns up at a Halloween party, doesn't need a bloody costume, because he already just looks like the Prince of Darkness. Halloween party at Benjamin's house. Benjamin, great, lovely bloke, by the way, really lovely bloke. Danielson and many other players literally climbing out the window and running away when he turns up. He went, Manuel Ruiz-Torpedo, went to Juan de Ramos's house, picked up Juan de Ramos and drove him to Benjamin's house when he heard about this Halloween party to basically break up this party. There were a lot of people there who probably shouldn't have been there.
Yes. All sorts must have been going on there. All sorts. You mentioned him. We mentioned some of the coaches that were involved in this era. Obviously, Luis Aragonés, Clemente, Gus Hiddink, Victor Fernandez, Juan de Ramos.
And it starts with Cesar Ferrer, who, of course, is the manager when they lose the Copa del Rey final in 97. Yes. And then he comes back later on. That Copa del Rey final, that was the year I lived in Oviedo.
Ah.
That was actually a really quite an exciting Betis team. You know, they had Alfonso, who was the kind of really standout player, and Fanidi.
He scored 25 goals in La Liga that season, yeah. Alfonso. And Alfonso Pérez, by the way, named after the Coliseum. Alfonso,
yes, absolutely.
Pérez.
He's named after the stadium, not the other way around.
Greatest player to come from.
Famously wore white boots at a time when no one wore white boots, apart from obviously John Barnes, I think, in the 96 yes. Cup final.
But yeah, he scored 25 goals in La Liga that season.
And then they signed Oli from Oviedo.
Oli?
Oli from Oviedo, who used to run as if he had a pole stuck up his arse. He was very kind of rigid.
Oli?
Oli, yeah.
I'm not
played
familiar
for Spain.
With that. All right, yeah. Okay. Oli. But yeah, so you said the Lorenz Serra Ferrer was the successful manager in this period, obviously, came back and won the Copa del Rey with them in 2005. The big footballing name, it wasn't Oli.
It wasn't Oli.
It was
no.
Danielson.
Although he did play for Spain and he was quite good.
All right, it was Danielson.
Yeah.
Who somehow ended up at Betis.
I mean, it is one of, certainly I think for people of our generation,
yeah.
I don't know about you, Kitro, but Betis signing Danielson is one of the most iconic, kind of earth-shattering transfer stories of that time, because he was, whatever he became later on, when they signed him, he was one of the most in-demand players in world football. Of course it was a world record
exciting.
Fee. He says himself, Danielson, that he thought he was going to Barca. Yeah, he says, I went to bed thinking I was going to Barca. I woke up and I was a Betis.
You'd be
player.
Pretty gutted, wouldn't you? To be honest.
You know, wow. Well, I'm sure he might have had to do a bit of research. You know, they paid for him more than, you know, Inter had just paid for Ronaldo Nathario, for example. This was one of the biggest talents in world football going to Betis.
Yeah, a winger of endless step overs.
Well, exactly. Right. The kind of stereotypical image of a tricky Brazilian wide man.
And I actually think a very good player. I know obviously he ends up being a pretty much an absolute massive failure at Betis. But in a way that's because of the price tag. There's a lovely match report I found for a game for El País, and the headline was, this time Danielson was decisive. And the opening line of the piece was something like, Danielson, who's never been able to get away from his marker and never been able to get away from his price tag either. And I think that kind of sums it up. But he was, you know, he was excited. But I remember speaking to some people at Betis about this transfer. I had to write a piece about it years ago now. And unfortunately, I couldn't find it before this, but I remember some of it. I remember speaking to people, and Danielson going there as the world's most expensive player precisely because he was the world's most expensive player. So in other words, Ruiz-Torpedo was effectively trying to force the price up because he wanted to be able to say, we've bought the most expensive player in the world. He you know, obviously he had to pay a lot to push Barcelona out of the bidding for it. But what really excited him wasn't so much the player as saying, Real Betis, my Real Betis is spending, what was it, £26 million, I think it was.
And giving him a 10-year contract.
Yes.
And it was also a deal that, at the time it was agreed in 97, maybe made sense in that Betis had just finished in the top four, I think, for 2 years in a in a row. The problem was he didn't arrive until 1998.
Yeah.
In the meantime, Betis had finished eighth. And so all of a sudden they weren't, you know, sort of necessarily the coming force like they could have been when the deal was agreed. And of course then went on in his debut season to finish in mid-table.
In his 18th game, he took a penalty, desperate to finally score, and had it saved by Molina, I think it was, against Atletico Madrid. Took him till February to get his first goal on Valentine's Day.
But there were still some there were some early, like you say, some early performances. There's a famous one at the Bernabeu against Real Madrid. In fact, before Betis won at the Bernabeu in 2017, the last time Betis had won at the Bernabeu was this game in October 1998. Finidi George scored the winner, a 1-0 win. Danielson played in that game. And again, was looked like quite a talented player.
Yeah, because he would certainly have moments. I didn't know this, by the way. I discovered this earlier on reading a piece on Danielson. He ended up going for a trial at Bolton. Gary Megson didn't like him.
Wow.
And obviously finished his career in Vietnam. For obviously. Hai Phong Cement.
Mm.
Wow.
Sounds, yeah.
Yeah?
Well, it's one of those players who it makes you wonder if he hadn't gone to Betis, if he hadn't gone to, had gone to Barca, for example, would that have been a better environment? Because there wouldn't have been all the pressure on him. Yeah. There would have been a framework in which he could operate. It wouldn't have been all about him as the star man. And it might be a different story, whereas he ended up becoming, well, yeah, a bit of a punchline.
In fact, he was a punchline. Well, interesting, you know, I think that's absolutely right.
If you watch interviews with him now, I was watching one on YouTube, and he actually ended up tearing up on camera, on TV, in tears, crying, sort of apologising to the Betis fans, saying, I'm really sorry. Like, I think for some of the things that he said over the years, there were some moments when he was a bit critical of the club and the fans, and it was a bit fractious, that relationship. And obviously feels quite regretful about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's I suppose it's natural for him to kind of be full of regret over it all. But he, you know, he did fail, and he did at times seem to be doing.
I mean,
what
was he expected to do? I mean, he was going to Betis, you know. Okay, he was a lot of money.
Maybe the expectation was this guy. I mean, I remember the other player who at the time was the most expensive player in the world around that sort of time. I think might have overtaken him, or might have been the one before him. I can't remember. Was Lentini, who went to Sampdoria
and failed massively.
But I think in both of these cases, maybe what was he supposed to do? I guess the expectation, or at least the hope, would
take
have been
to the next level.
Exactly, he's gonna.
Well,
lead
I mean,
us.
They did qualify for the Champions League. He was still there.
Yeah,
that season, he was still there. He was still playing
and
a little bit.
He did do things where he was. But yeah, he had moments where he was absolutely brilliant.
I think he was also expected to. I know he was a winger, not a striker, but he was expected to score goals. Yeah. And he never consistently scored goals. And again, he's talked himself about having a real problem in front of goal where he kept missing chances and they weren't going in.
Yeah. I saw the stat. Here we go. Here's the stat. 186 games for Betis. Because he played a long time and he was there for 7 years.
Yeah.
13 goals.
With a brief stint back in Brazil when
Flamenco,
they got relegated,
wasn't it?
As well.
I think it was
yeah.
at Flamenco. And then he came back for.
Because he wasn't getting paid.
And he was. Yeah, well, I mean, that sort of tells you something about the whole kind of craziness of it. I remember another one where there was a game against Real Madrid and the generator failed and the floodlights went off after 47 minutes and this kind of caused a big stir and Ruth Lopeda's there going, and literally in the papers there's photographs of him pointing at the generator. Look, this is a generator, it's great. Look, here's our man fixing it. And just the whole thing. And the local electricity company, Endesa, I think in Seville, came along and said, well, we would have fixed this generator for him, but Ruth Lopeda won't let us in the stadium.
Why?
I don't know, because he's a bit weird. And then, obviously, Madrid, this as happens in Spain, this game had to be restarted with the score still at 1-0. And it went on for so long. I remember there was a quote from Michel Salgado saying, I'd rather start the game 1-0 down and just get on with it than have to keep listening to bloody Lopeda.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
the holidays have arrived early with Blinds.com's Spring Black Friday sale. Upgrading window coverings can be a minor project with a major impact. Blinds.com makes it easy and affordable. Browse premium blinds, shades, shutters. We have your patio covered too. And get unlimited window treatments installed for one low cost. Free shipping and Blinds.com's 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com's Spring Black Friday sale now. Save up to 45% plus premium doorbusters. Up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Do you want to go from one flying winger to another?
Yes.
Because, of course, at one point, sharing the wings or on opposite wings for Betis, Danielson, and everyone's favourite, Japester, Joaquin, who I think made his debut when Betis had just been relegated in 2000. So this was their season, their promotion season in the Segunda.
Well, and then they came back up. And obviously what tends to happen in situations like this, a team goes down and they cost cut. And then that provides, if you like, the impetus or the necessity to give an opportunity to young players. You had a Betis team come back with Capi. Obviously, Alfonso was still there. Capi would play off the front. And Varela and Joaquin. And Varela was actually a right winger. But because they had Joaquin, they played him at right back. And Varela and Joaquin were this kind of great force of nature, the two of them bombing up and down the right-hand side. It didn't quite happen for Varela. In the end, it petered out a little bit. I mean, I think he was a good player, but perhaps not the star that he was going to be. But this is why I was saying to you before we started, I said, don't let me forget to read out a match report, right? Now, I remembered this, and I've gone to find the match report, because in September 2002, Real Betis came up, and they were flying. They had a really, really good start to the season. They played against Barcelona in Huelva, because the stadium had been closed. They'd been forced to play away from home. In Huelva, they won 3-0 against Barcelona. And I remember writing, they were genuine challengers. And here's one for you. I actually wrote in my match report at the time, Joaquin and Danielson were magic on the wing. So Danielson did sometimes do things, and this is kind of Capi, Alfonso, team, Varela. But this is the match report in ASS. Now, apologies for the bits of this which were actually a bit unpleasant, but mostly it's incredibly funny. The match report's headline was Betis Orgasm.
Okay.
Right?
Strong start.
Yeah. And it starts with Betis enjoyed a night of easy sex at the expense of Barcelona.
Okay.
There's a couple of bits which are, sort of a little bit unpleasant. Basically says, these are people who are capable... Where is it? Talking about the Betis players, these are people who are capable of seducing. Jennifer Lopez, Imadel Moral, Vicky Martin Berrocal. I don't know who these are. I assume they're incredibly attractive women.
Jennifer Lopez is a singer.
Yeah, I knew who Jennifer Lopez was. It was the two Spaniards, but I didn't actually know. How could they not have been able to completely F over Mendieta, Puyol or Fernando Navarro? Anyway, there's also, a rather unfortunate, unpleasant use of the word violation for what they did to Barcelona. But then it gets really, really bizarre.
Which means rape.
Yes.
I mean, you know.
Then it gets really, really bizarre. Alfonso's penalty broke Barcelona's hymen. Joaquin's goal was the glorious pre-climax.
What?
And the winning goal was the frenzied climax itself.
Wow. This is still on the internet.
Isn't that quite something?
Do we know who wrote this?
Yes. Yes. I mean, it's probably best we don't say, isn't it? But this was in one of the Spanish papers. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
It's quite bizarre.
So they played well then?
Yes. Yes. I mean, it's quite bizarre.
Sid, I don't know where to go from this.
Van Gaal only wanted to give the Betis fans the virtual orgasm of Meg Ryan when Harry met Sally. But the Dutchman... blah blah blah. I mean, it's just, you know, it's really quite something, isn't
it? I mean,
we can't say anything anymore, can we?
Should we move on from that to the climax of this Betis era, which was probably, well, was certainly winning the Copa del Rey in 2005,
which is arguably their best ever year, or certainly their best year in recent memory, winning the Copa del Rey and qualifying for the Champions League.
And they hadn't won anything as well since the 70s. It was 77 that was their previous Copa del Rey, previous only at that point Copa del Rey victory. So this, it was a massive deal.
And this was, I don't know if it's the very next day, but I think it's either a day or 2 days after Joaquin got married.
Right.
And him and his wife had the Copa del Rey at the altar.
Yeah.
Which is obviously only the second most famous photograph from this Copa del Rey involving Joaquin. The other one is Joaquin in the dressing room with the Copa del Rey wearing absolutely nothing. But not just wearing nothing, because, I mean, up to a point that wouldn't be a big deal, but squatting in a really quite revealing sort of way.
The other famous photo related to this Copa del Rey triumph is the team photo, the Betis team photo before the game.
You know, with Danielson,
you know,
in
how
it.
The players pose out on the pitch. If you take a look at that photo of the Betis team just before the kickoff in the Copa del Rey final, it's at the Calderon against Osasuna in 2005. You'll notice something's a little bit off. If you count the players, there are 12 of them.
Yeah.
And that's because Danielson insisted on posing with the other 11 in the team photo. He didn't even play in the final. He didn't get off the bench. He was an unused substitute. But he is there in the team photo because he basically knew, I guess, this is my farewell. This is it. And I think he said afterwards, you know, I had to be in that photo because I knew that this was my way of saying goodbye to Betis.
And they, of course, beat Osasuna 2-1 with a goal, I think, from Danny.
In extra time.
Danny was a kind of a small scurrying little striker, kind of a little sort of a little ratoncito, I suppose they call it in Spain, a little rat, a little mouse, a sort of, yeah, sort of. But he was also extraordinarily gravitationally challenged. He loved a dive.
Oh, I see. I thought you meant he was short. Yeah.
Well, he was short as well. Yeah. He was just an extraordinary diver. And okay. He was this kind of player that you must absolutely hate if he plays against you. But yeah. Bears fans really quite liked him.
Yeah, it was a good goal to win the game. I was on YouTube watching it, and it was a nice
finish.
It was a
good play. It seemed to disappear quite quickly, I must admit.
He got injured, apparently. He got very injured, and then sort of his career ended in Greece. In the lower leagues of Greece.
Where so many players go to spend the twilight of their careers.
Slightly better than ending up playing for a cement club in Vietnam, I suppose.
In Vietnam, yes. I guess so. So, yeah, they beat Osasuna by 2-1 at the Vicente Calderon. I actually know someone, an English guy who's been living in Madrid for a long time, and he's like, oh, I don't really have a team, you know, in Spain, you know. Yeah, I don't really have a team. But if I did, it would be Betis.
Is he from Yorkshire? He is, yeah. Okay, good.
If I did, it would be Betis. And because of the fans that came here that day at the Calderon, he said they took over the city. They were absolutely brilliant. It was amazing. So he's certainly got a soft spot for Betis since that day.
And when they came to the Copa del Rey final in Madrid in 97,
right,
and they lost to Barcelona. And actually, by the way, that's probably the beginning of Real Madrid saying Barcelona can't play cup finals at the Bernabeu, because that day, Joan Gaspart, the Barcelona vice president, made them put the Barcelona anthem on 5 times after the game and was parading around going, here we are in the Bernabeu. But anyway, for that cup final, 85,000 Betis fans came to Madrid. Obviously, only about 30,000 have had tickets, but 85,000 Betis fans came to Madrid.
Wow, that's madness.
It's going some, isn't it?
Just to sort of underline, obviously, we say it a lot on the normal podcast, just how big a club Real Betis are.
Are they huge?
I mean, currently they've got something, is it 50,000+ season ticket holders? Just to give you an idea. In a very, very nice new stadium, which is not called the Ruiz de Lopera anymore. Back to being the Benny V.
Well, and also, you know, this is a team that, I think there's two reasons why Betis seem to be a team that are huge everywhere in Spain. One is because they are, because they have a huge fan base. But the other is because migration patterns in Spain really started with Andalusians moving to the rest of the country.
Yes.
So it's not just that there are Betis fans, they are everywhere. So there is not a city that Betis go and play in that hasn't got a big population of Andalusians who are Betis fans. And so there is a genuine sense that they're a little bit special, and they are all over the place. And also, you know, again, this is slightly cliched, but there's that idea of Betis being funny, you know, the idea of Guasa being the thing that defines the city of Seville. And Guasa is really kind of, what would you call it?
Bants.
I suppose it's Bants, yeah. And
Andalusian Bants.
They're seen as the funny ones. And in particular, within Seville, Betis fans would probably claim that they're a bit more earthy and a bit more funny than Sevilla are, that Sevilla are perhaps a little more straight-laced. I don't know if that's entirely fair. But Betis, famously, this is a stadium where a son used to take his dad to games, even though his dad was dead. He would take his dad's ashes in a milk carton to every single match. Where you would see the guy with You would see the guy with a cardboard box on his head that doubled up as a birdcage. He had a green Budrigar. Yes. Not Budrigar. Budrigar in his thing on his head at games.
Extremely eccentric.
Betis always made this thing of being funny. And in part it was cliched, in part it was folkloric, in part Betis fans didn't like the fact that we thought they were funny. And
well, it's been underlined by Joaquin over the last few years. He's sort of taken that on.
And you know, this whole idea of, you know, Viva el Betis, manque piedra, you know, long live Betis even when they lose.
Yes.
And yeah, they're definitely a bit special.
Also why they were a fitting choice to end our first series of classic teams. All those reasons why we felt they were a good selection
because
to end this series.
Even when they lose.
Even when they lose, yes.
And they did win during this spell as well.
And they also lost many times as well, but we still did them. So there we go. That was Betis 1997 to 2000 and some of the madness that occurred during that period. That's the end of this series. I'm not sure if we're going to do another series of classic teams. We're definitely going to do another series of TSFP Presents. So stay tuned. We're coming up
with good ideas.
We've got big plans. Big dreams.
In theory. And we will let you know. We will let you know very soon what the next series is going to be about. So thanks for listening. Adios.
Cheerio.
Bye.